Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams. Today we have another amazing guest. She was on the most recent U.S. national tour, number 6, as a swing covering Grisabella and Jelly Lorum. So welcome, Kellyanne DeCarlo. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah.
Again, recording live. This is new still kind of to be back doing this, which is, I think, fun because it makes the conversation so much more fun.
And totally.
We've already talked a little bit about this, so I know this is going to be very fun to hear your thoughts. So
lots to say.
Let's start with the first part we always have to get out of the way, which is your history of Cats before you actually went on tour in Cats. So first time you saw it, first impressions of it,
where
was that first moment?
My first impression of it was, well, so in college, many years ago, we were very lucky to have Jacob Brent be our teacher for the last semester
in
of my
college,
senior year. Yeah, he came in and subbed for our normal teacher who was suffering an injury. So I had Jacob Brent for the last semester of college, and he taught us original choreography for McCavity and for a little bit of the Jellicle Ball, I think. And I remember realizing how special it was to like learn Cats from him, because he was Miss Doe.
Yep.
You know, and I remember, but not really connecting to the material. And we all kind of like laughed at it. Like, admittedly, I was really somebody who sort of groaned at the idea of Cats. I just kind of didn't. It just wasn't on my radar. No.
Okay, so you weren't the like young, because there's only there's only two versions of this answer, it seems like, at this point.
Yes.
You either are like, I saw it as like a young kid and I wanted to be the dancer, I wanted to be the singer.
Yeah.
Or it's like, I got introduced to it later, but it was always a running joke, and now you're you're in it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. And I really just kind of rolled my eyes at it. And then it's kind of a longer story, but right after college I worked at a summer stock up in New England, and it was like exactly what you would picture, like 5 shows in 3 months. I've never worked harder for less money in my whole life, but it was a lot of fun. And after I had finished my season there, a couple years later, the artistic director reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do Cats for their season. So I played Grisabella for them regionally. And before I left for that, I kind of was just like, ugh, like, I don't know. Like, I guess I should take this shot. I haven't worked in over a year. Like, I guess I'll, whatever.
Yep.
And I went, and before I left for that contract, I saw the revival, the most recent one.
Okay, so this is 2000. So you were, did you see it before college?
No.
Okay.
I'd never even seen the movie.
Not even seen the 1990 movie.
Mm-mm.
But of course you know what it is because you're in theater.
Oh, yeah.
So you know,
and I loved like Phantom, and I loved Evita. Like, I loved Weber's material, but I just, Cats was always one that I was just like, I don't know if that's for me.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
joked that I'm a dog person, but I really just had no interest. And then, so I saw the revival, and I remember I somehow scored really cheap seats to the orchestra. And I saw, so I sat in the orchestra. So I was right around Green Eyes when everybody came out, and I remember being like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I saw Mamie Paris.
Okay, so you're not right away. So you didn't see the Leo, you saw Mamie.
No, I saw Mamie.
Great.
And I remember sort of being like, what? Like, kind of paying, like, sort of being entertained by what was happening, not sure what was happening at all, but very surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And I mean, Mamie Paris as Grisabella was she's like the no breath wonder. I mean, she sings that whole climax on one breath. It's nuts.
Yeah, Mamie's performance is insane. I did get to see. I've seen it twice. I saw Leona Lewis, and then I saw Mamie a year later.
I told you I wore Leona's unitard on tour, which was wild.
That is wild. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was cool.
That's so funny. Because it's like it is such an experience the first time you're live in the theater.
There's so much,
especially
happening.
Orchestra. You know, you're there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in the set. There's just a lot happening, and then Green Eyes comes out. Mm-hmm. I equated it to the very first time I forget the movie. I think it's This Is 40. It's one of those movies with Paul Rudd and Seth Rogen.
Okay.
And they go to Vegas, they do a bunch of drugs, and they're mesmerized by Cirque du Soleil.
Yes.
That's what I felt, but I was dead sober, and it was a matinee for me the first time I saw it. And I was like, I feel like I'm on a trip without being on a trip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was immediately what I thought when I saw it.
Totally.
It was overwhelming.
Yeah, it's just a lot to look at. And then I remember, but somehow like at the end when she goes up on the tire, I was crying because I was just like so happy for her. Like it was just one of those things that I didn't know why it affected me, but it did. And then I went and did the show regionally with Chaz Wolcott, who was Misto on the tour, the first national tour.
Wow. Okay.
And he taught us the original choreography and kind of was the beginning of like my journey with Grisabella, kind of really gave me the backstory of her time with McCavity and how that kind of affected who she becomes and the equivalence of how it's like if somebody that you know who kind of got mixed up with drugs and kind of found the wrong people. And I had a great experience. And one of the things that I think is so special about Cats is that the cast, you have to have such a trust with each other physically. I don't know a lot of other shows that require you to sort of like roll on each other and like lick each other's paws. Yeah, in a unitard, like covered in sweat. Okay, there's nothing glamorous about it. And I think like I was really struck by that, watching it and experiencing it regionally. And then the pandemic happened, everything shut down, and there was a breakdown for a swing possible understudy for Grisabella.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like probably right out of the pandemic. I think I submitted for it, I taped for it like maybe July of 2021.
Okay.
And then I had two work sessions. It was like my second in-person audition in 2 years. And I had two work sessions with the creative team, and then I got cast, and then I left 10 days later. It was very fast.
Quick.
Yeah, it was very quick.
I guess
quick.
They kind of, you know,
kind of
you
zero
had,
to 100.
Yeah, but you also have experience with it, having done it recently too.
Yeah.
Like right, not that long before.
Right,
regionally.
A couple years, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the regional versus the tour.
Oh, yeah.
What you're told.
What I'm told. Oh,
how
gosh.
Much backstory do you get when you're doing a regional production? Like,
because I think you can't do Cats. I guess you can, but like the way that Cats is usually done regionally is by somebody who's already done it.
Yeah.
So they can sort of pass the knowledge around, which is always really, it's like very special. It's like kind of reminiscent of like oral tradition and like ancient cultures. Like it's you kind of.
Totally. And I think that's why there's so many versions of theories.
Probably,
is because it's a little bit of telephone downwards from the group of people that did it originally when they were in there. It's like, this is what I remember. This is how we did it.
Sure.
And it seems like some of those are because of relationships with cast members. It's like they're friends, so they played it this way.
Right. Yeah,
but it is a little bit like it, to me it's fascinating because in regional there's so much unknown in this story.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a few constants and there's a lot of unknown.
Yes.
So I'm always interested in the regional of like how much blanks do they fill in versus how much like they just kind of go out there like here's the core and go out there and just do it.
Yeah, I think with regional, like with On Tour, we got the three words from Chrissy, which was really special and helpful, especially with, and Kim was there too. So Kim sets the show and then Chrissy would come in from London and kind of share all of her information and all her backstory, and half of it was on Zoom because of the pandemic, but then she finally came in person and talked to us, and it was really, really cool, and the three words really helped. So that was something from tour that was really special. And then on regionally, there's not much difference that I noticed, except that we didn't get the three words, and also that I was told as Grisabella that I was not, there was no McCavity connection. It was just that she, that they were not connected at all. They were two separate things. And I don't know if, I mean, don't quote me, I don't know. But when I went on tour, it was very clear that Grisabella got mixed up with McCavity, so did Baum. And what I heard was that Baum got out and Grisabella didn't, which is why right before Remark, when Baum snubs Gris, it's a huge slap in the face because Baum knows what Gris has been through.
Yeah. That's okay. So let's get into theories.
Now. Oh yeah.
Let's
I got so many.
I've always connected. There's the Baum and Demeanor connection for sure because they sing the song together, and so that's where most of this is. A lot of this comes from staging. Is really what I've picked up. So, Baum and Demeanor, like I've always thought of Baum and Grizz as more of a, daughter or kind of version of that where, yes, mm-hmm. she got out, but where's Demeter in that? If Bomb mm-hmm. if Bomb and Grizabella are in with McCavity together, Grizz doesn't get out, Bomb does, where's Demeter there in that whole thing?
I think Demeter got, like, I think, well, I think that Demeter gets lured by McCavity later and okay. Bomb gets her out.
Got it.
Kind of saves Demeter, which is why a lot of the time, Bomb kind of acts as Demeter's big sister.
Yeah. Are they sisters, though?
No, I actually think I have a weird conspiracy theory that Bomb is actually Grizabella's little sister.
Oh, so they're
yes.
they're
and like
sisters.
Kind of Grizz like was like, I'll stay, you go. And then she kind
it's
of
very Hunger Games.
It is very Hunger Games.
Okay. Okay. That's yeah. interesting. I hadn't thought yeah. about it that way. So yeah. they're sisters because it feels like there's supposed to be a much bigger
well, yeah.
age gap.
Yes.
So this is I guess it's cats. So they
yeah,
can be,
it's cats.
They can be
yeah.
all kinds of different.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So that's kind yeah. of fun. So then that is kind of weird and incestuous
yeah.
vibe with McCavity.
Yeah. yeah.
And then.
For sure.
Okay. And
yeah.
then Demeter is not their sister. How
no,
is Demeter
think,
related at all to them?
I don't think Demeter and Bomb are
separate.
Related. I think that they're separate and I think they're friends and I think that Bomb helped get Demeter away.
So she gets her out.
Mm-hmm. But I think Demeter like feels like I know when we played it, Lauren Liu played Demeter and she and I had a really nice moment on stage at the Jellicle Ball when the sleep, we call it the sleepy circle, but when they okay. realize that Grizz has snuck in and she's up in the back mm. and it's after the paw with I almost said Aiden, that's who played it, Plato and Victoria, and the first people to wake up are the twins because they sense her and
yes.
then everybody wakes up and everyone's like, get out of here. And Lauren and I had this really special moment on stage where we would sort of like connect and almost try to paw each other and then she would go into the dance and it was just a special moment because she's always curious about Grizz. She's the last one to sort of look. She tries to give her hand and then she gets scared and Monk always protecting her. So I have this weird theory that like Demeter is very connected to Grizz because she has a sympathy that Bomb lacks.
Well, it also in the theory that you kind of you've put forward mm-hmm. it's also she might see that she has like she's in the early stages of
yeah.
where Grizz was.
Yes.
So it's like she's seeing this going like
sure.
this is either my future
totally.
Or I can get out like my friend.
Totally. And I think Grizz didn't have a Monk. I think Monk because Monk and Demeter are together.
Okay.
So I think, and I have another theory. This is you're really getting into it with me here. I have another theory that Monk and Grizz were a thing. Like
Monk
very
and
casually.
Were.
And that's why Grizabella gets so angry when Monk tries to like assert himself. She's like, who the hell are you?
Okay. How old
yeah.
is Monk in this whole thing? Like, where does he fall? Because I know they're supposed to be like the old, mm-hmm. the like teenagers and then
yeah.
the kittens.
I think Monk is probably like 25, 26. And
okay.
I think Grizabella is like 33, 34.
So this is, she basically cougared him early.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And then
and now
he's
yes.
with
He's
his
yeah.
current
he's
girl.
Saving Demeter because he couldn't save Grizz. That's what I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't never thought about that angle for him because I've always thought his mm-hmm. whole goal is to become next in line.
It is. Yeah.
And so I just never even thought about all the other things he might be trying to do. He
yeah.
just seems like I've always just like he's annoyed because
yeah.
you know, his dad won't leave
yeah.
forever. And he's ready. He's ready to take over.
Yeah.
And he's not. I mean,
yeah.
it feels.
He's not really ready until the end, though, because he still doesn't really accept Grizabella until the end.
Yeah, but is it?
I think that's his biggest
when's
lesson.
When's his turn?
I think, well, I don't know. I think Monk's journey is so interesting because he's kind of like the prince in waiting. Like, I used to joke that Monk and Tugger were like Harry and William.
Yeah.
Like, Tugger is Harry, Monk is William, and one has a path and the other one doesn't, you know? So it's just like, I think, back to your original question, I think that he is sort of just like waiting, like just sitting and waiting and just kind of ready. And I think Dute, we were talking a little bit about when does Dute get to go to the Heaviside Lair? I think it's Dute's choice. I think it's Dute will choose when Monk is ready, and when Monk is ready, then Dute will go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he's basically very fatherly in that way.
Yes. Yes.
Like it's my time.
Yeah.
I see a lot of selfishness in Dute and I don't see him going.
Hmm.
In a while. I just feel like
that's
you know,
interesting.
He's gonna hold on for a while.
Interesting.
But
maybe.
We also again we only have one ball.
Yeah,
so
that's
like
true.
I don't know if that could be. I also don't know like what the like true lifespan is here.
Sure.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
This, so
yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other what other theories do you have?
Other theories. I have a theory that Victoria, well, I think you've heard this before, but Victoria is Grizabella's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my things as an actor to sort of figure out for myself was what makes this year different? Why is it different? Why does Grizabella come now? Because in my mind, this is their first time seeing her in a while.
So that's a good question, because this is something that I hadn't thought about until recently, when other people have now said this, is does she come back before this? Like, how, because like my interpretation when I first saw it, or, you know, the first, my first thought was, is she left, she got in rough with McCavity, and she left. Like, she was out, and this is her first time coming back. And they're not accepting her for that reason. Like, she's gone and this is her time. And that's like, that's why there's the little memory. And then she comes back and they accept her.
Right.
I hadn't considered that. Like, maybe she's tried to come back a couple times, actually got there, talked to other cats, and they were like, no, get out of here, before the whole ball.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of equate it to someone who is struggling with addiction. And there is this process where they try, they like will say, I'm fine, I don't have a problem. I think there was like if you want to humanize them, I think that was the equivalent of that.
It makes
and
sense.
In my opinion, the last one to really let her go is Jelly. So I think everybody kind of wrote her off. And I think Jelly's the last one to sort of be like, I'm done. Like, I can't. And then I think it's been a chunk of time since Grisabella went to the ball. And I think the reason she comes back is because it's Victoria's year and Victoria's her daughter. So she comes back to see, because she does a whole, I mean, she, when she enters for the ball, she watches, she is like front and center for the pas de deux. She can see the whole thing.
Yeah. So, okay, I want to cover one piece of this first.
Yeah.
With Victoria, she has her kind of coming of age moment, right? Like, that's supposed to be her dance.
Yes.
Is this like supposed to be her bat mitzvah, quinceañera, sweet 16 type of thing?
Well, we're sort of told it's kind of her first orgasm. It's her first losing her virginity, sort of.
Okay. So I think that's like supposed to be part of the dance.
Yes.
I thought about it. That makes sense. But, but like, is this a celebration? Like,
yes.
So cats come together and they're just like, this is going to be her first orgasm. So we're going to come have a party for her?
Kind of. It's kind of like the equivalent of her kind of becoming a woman, sort of. Yeah. It's like her graduation from like the kitten.
So this—that is what this event is. So this is like, this ball is going to be for Victoria, coming of age, and then everyone else is going to kind of make their case for why they should go.
Yeah.
So that's the two pieces that we have there.
Yes, for the most part. Yeah.
So that gets into my part that I'm always so curious about. Is someone going to have their coming of age next year too?
Like, yes.
Are these balls always the same?
Yes. It's a ritual. So that's like they say that the ball itself is the ritual. So when everything comes quiet and they do this very slow kind of fluid dance in the middle, that's the ritual that they do every single year. The other numbers are kind of just like, it's kind of like the Tony Awards, like you're sort of showing.
Got it.
You're showing why you should be chosen.
So next year,
except
someone's
Tugger,
gonna have,
he's never an option.
So next year, someone's gonna have their first orgasm. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
At the show, at the ball.
Yes.
And so they're gonna celebrate that, and then they're gonna kill somebody.
Yes.
That's the premise of the show.
Someone
has their first orgasm, someone gets murdered.
I don't know if an orgy like that happens every year, but I will say that is a huge part. Like the ball itself is kind of...
Like that is insane when you think about that as the ritual. The ritual is someone has their first orgasm, they have an orgy, and then they murder somebody.
Pretty much.
That's cats.
That's like an episode of American Horror Story.
That's cats. That is...
There's also the whole thing about forgiveness and
but that is every year's choice.
I don't know.
That's what's fascinating to me because I feel like redemption was this year's lesson.
Yes.
So maybe there's a lesson with that.
There could be.
But
I would see that with Dude, as you said, kind of selfishly, like trying to teach a lesson every year.
Yeah,
with
and the lesson could be different every year.
Right.
Or it could be who's most deserving, most willing.
Could be.
That is when we get into the debate of why or why not Grisabella. I think that's a core question is what is the criteria every year?
Yeah.
But now I'm just stuck on the fact that their ritual.
Yes.
That someone wrote an entire musical based on children's poems.
Yes.
And the outcome of this is a ritual of celebrating someone's first orgasm, having an orgy, and then murdering.
Well, I think it's also kind of leaning into the animalisticness of it, is that, you know, they're cats. They're not as cerebral as we are. Well, actually, cats are very cerebral, but they don't think as critically as we do. So I think it's you have to sort of lean into that part of it, because otherwise it looks like it's just humans on stage in cat costumes. You have to lean into the physicality of it and the sensuality of, I mean, cats are very sensual animals.
I don't disagree with all of that.
Yeah.
I just find...
It's just funny.
I just find it very comical
sure.
that's the premise.
Yeah.
To the fact that there are like a bunch of 5 and 6 year old children in the audience of the show.
I know.
It's like the staples are all these like very dark things that go right over their head.
But it's funny that a lot of the stuff for a lot of the themes of the show, they get a lot of it. Like they don't get the darker stuff, but they do get like that Grizabella is an outcast. She's ostracized. Like they understand the bare bones of the themes of forgiveness and redemption, which I think is probably what makes the show so beautiful.
Yeah. There's a lot of merits to it too, because it's also visually stunning.
Yeah.
The dances are incredible.
Yeah,
the choreography is incredible.
I love the updates with the revival. Andy did such a great job on that.
Yeah. So
cool.
You have some other things there, but I'm just stuck on the fact that it's like, cause I always thought like, oh yeah, she has this, but now that it's an every year celebrating somebody's coming of age.
Yes.
And
to be fair, that doesn't always, I mean, maybe that doesn't look like an orgasm for everybody, but for, I will say for Victoria,
that's what it is.
Now
we got very off topic.
Yeah, sorry.
So she comes, it was my fault because I was kind of fascinated by this.
It's okay.
So Grizabella's coming back because it's her daughter.
I think it's Grizabella. Yeah, I think Grizabella knows it's Victoria's year and she's coming back
to see. And so she wants to come see that.
She wants to come see. And I think, she's also close to the end. And I think she realizes that if she doesn't get help now, she won't survive. I mean, they say it in the song, they really thought she ought to be dead.
Yeah.
Which is another reason why I think that they haven't seen her in a long time.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And so, how much of your theories do you think come from the fact that as a swing, you covered Grizz and Jelly? Like, that? Like, did you piece more together because those were the two you were going back and forth between mostly?
Not necessarily. I think I had a lot of experience with Grizabella's backstory. And I mean, it was really cool because I only got to enrich that on tour, but I didn't have that with Jelly. So it was all new. And I think Jelly's... I remember Jelly two out of her three words, but I know they were practical and cheery. But Jelly spends the whole show looking after everyone else.
Yeah, especially Gus.
Yeah, especially Gus. But she also looks after the kittens. She also looks after Jenny. She also looks after Demeter. There's a ton of things that she's, little side things that she's doing to make sure everyone's safe, everyone's okay.
Yep.
Even Dude, she and Skimble try to protect Dude at one point, right before he's kidnapped. So there's a lot of her real thing is protection, I think. And I think a lot of times Jenny gets the motherly rap, and I would say that Jelly is like the cool aunt to Jenny's mom. Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, and I think for me, what was cool about learning with Jelly was that she kind of gets passed over, even her opportunity to sort of plead her own case, she spends that time pleading Gus's.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is very selfless. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Okay. Yeah. What about, I've always thought there might be some love triangle between Buster Jones, Jelly, and Grizabella.
No, I think I'm going to counter that and say I think it's between Buster Jones, Jelly, and Jenny.
And Jenny?
Yeah, because they sing that song together.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I always thought that they were friends. They were all friends.
They are friends.
And Bustopher was, I think Buster was Grizabella's pimp for a little while.
Oh,
with McCavity.
I've never heard of that.
Because he's the money. He's the money behind the operation.
That makes
I think
sense.
He's the money behind McCavity's operation.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Is that not right?
I don't know. I've never heard of that.
That's my just my interpretation of
him. Interesting.
Because there's very little backstory for him. He's
yeah.
just like comes
he's just
on
in and out.
He eats, sings, and goes.
Yes, yes.
But he's also he visits gentlemen's clubs.
Yes.
That's like a big rumor that's staple. Now, I'm not sure what that means in England, if it means the same thing as it means here in the US.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit more wholesome mm-hmm. than it is in the
mm-hmm.
US.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of always like, all right, he's the money there.
Sure.
And that's what kind of started a little bit of their problems.
Okay.
But they were friends before. That
right.
seemed to be a staple, is that Grizabella
like
and Bustopher was there.
For
yeah. he's the money behind the scenes.
That's amazing. Wow.
And then Jelly and Bustopher, there are some rumors between the two of them.
Sure, sure.
So my thought was that maybe Jelly doesn't like Grizz not being protective of mm-hmm. the kittens, but because she's still mad of the whole
it's interesting.
Love triangle.
No, I guess I never gave Bustopher that much because he's only in one scene. He's kind of like an
yeah,
in and out.
He also gets cut in the Royal Caribbean
yes.
cruise. And
yes,
like,
yes.
He's not the yeah. most, he gets a bad rap
right.
because he's just, you know, and he's also Gus.
Right.
So it's
right.
a little bit.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that I pieced together in the rehearsal process was everybody says that Jenny is angry at Grizabella because like she was the mother figure and she's there to protect the kittens. And she has right before remark when Grizabella enters, Jenny has a very strong reaction right at the
mm-hmm.
gate. And everybody says she's protecting the kittens. But what I also pieced together is that Jelly is also behind her.
Oh,
so I also think in addition to protecting the kittens, she's protecting her friend, because I think in my mind, Jelly is the last one who was kind of holding out hope.
This is where as someone who's performed the show
yeah.
a million times
yeah.
versus someone who's seen
mm-hmm.
it twice,
mm-hmm.
seen the 98 movie once
yeah.
and a half and
yeah.
some YouTube clips, like I don't even get that staging.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't be able to see it because they cut
yeah.
around.
Totally.
And it's so fascinating that you're like, oh, she's standing
yeah.
like that is they're behind. Or like
yeah, yeah.
I do think there is a lot of fascinating pieces you can put together too of like, where are you in Skimbleshank's train? Or were you
yeah.
here of like
sure.
that what that means?
Sure.
I haven't seen it enough to be able to
yeah.
like truly do that.
Yeah, and that's what I think. I think that Jelly, Jenny, and Skimble were the three who really tried to give Grizabella, like, who tried to just kind of like help her and bring her and kind of plead her case to everybody else. And I think that Grizabella just messed up too many times, and they kind of were just like, at this point, no more. And I think Jelly is the last one who was like, I'm done. And that was it.
And then now she's the one kind of
yeah.
accepting her back, and that's what it takes for
yeah.
her to be the choice.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're on tour,
yes.
How much do you all talk about this at all?
Oh, well, so in rehearsals, obviously, we talked about it a lot. I don't know if we had like really deep conversations about it on tour because we were doing the show every night.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it was cool to sort of build, especially swinging the show, it was cool to sort of build your own relationships with everybody. Like I had that great moment with Lauren. I had some really great moments with Hyla, who played Victoria as well.
Mm-hmm.
I used to see her before the show started, and I would just say like, see you at the end, because I literally don't see her really
yeah.
until the very end when she touches me.
Do you not see her as Baby Grizz?
No, I played Baby Grizz when I was on for Grizabella.
No, I know, but you don't
yeah.
see her during that moment?
Not really.
Okay.
Like a little bit, but not really. Actually, the person I interacted the most was Demeter.
Okay.
Grizz.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a little foreshadowing, maybe.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I think it's interesting also that Baby Grizz's only line in the opening is "When you're walking alone."
Wow. I didn't know if she even had a line. That's,
yeah, she has one song at the end. They each have like little chunks of text before it really picks
yeah.
up. And Grizabella's only thing is "When you're walking alone."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
so I've always been curious of like when there's so much source material and you
sure.
come up with all these rumors, like
yeah,
how
yeah,
much
yeah.
does that come up when you're like sitting on the bus heading to your next city?
yeah, I mean, it would come up every once in a while. It's not that we talked about all the time, but yeah.
Did you notice that you had different relationships with the actual cast members based on who they played?
Oh, gosh, good question.
Like, how much does that bleed through a little bit?
Well, I think we are. Kim does such a great job. Kim Craven, who sets the national tour,
mm-hmm.
she does such a great job of casting the show based off of sort of your own natural inclinations and personalities. So I think, like, our the Jenny who's on the tour now and who was with me as well, her name's Michelle Carter. She is very motherly, very maternal naturally. And I think that is, she's like always trying to take care of everybody. So I think to some extent it does sort of bleed through. I mean, our bomb ballerina, Chelsea Mitchell, she was unbelievable. And she had that like bomb energy of sort of commanding a room and really, and it was, yeah. So I would say like, I would definitely say it bleeds through to some extent, for sure. Yeah.
I found
that's
this
why we
part,
connect to the characters. And,
yeah. You know. I found this part of swinging so interesting.
Yeah.
When you have, especially when you swing four or five characters. Now you're doing two.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're two different personality types that you'd have to go through.
Yes.
And as I've talked to other swings, it's like, they either are told, like I've talked to a swing who's like, I'm not at all a tugger, like, you know? And so it's like really interesting to go on for that.
Totally.
But yours, kind of what you're saying is a lot of your tour, it's like, it kind of fit the personality types. Like it was part of the casting almost, which I guess makes sense.
Sure. I mean, I think to an extent, right? I mean, there is acting involved and you have
there
to sort
has
of
to
create.
Be,
you have to create your own character.
God,
but
I hope.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, I hope, because otherwise, what we talked about a few minutes ago, I'm like, I really hope that's not someone like
in
an abusive relationship.
No,
like,
of course not. Of course not. Yeah, but your natural inclination is to connect you to a certain character. I think that's across the board, all shows, not just Cats.
And I mean, it kind of does make sense. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about tour.
Okay.
How, like, tell me about, like, that, not just the lifestyle, but, like, you're in, like, we were talking about me being from the Midwest. You're like, I'm in this city, hated one, loved one, didn't do this. This was there.
Yeah.
What kind of makes the part of the city you like the most? Is it the food scene? Is it the theater? Like, what is it about the stops that make it?
Well, I think being local to New York, I think if there was ever a walking city, instant check plus.
Okay.
As long as that really made a huge difference, because you can walk to coffee, you can walk to lunch, you can find something, you can go shopping, you can do other things, you can have like a life outside of just I leave the hotel and I go to the theater. So that is a huge
thing. What were your favorite walking cities?
Ooh, favorite walking city. I loved Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
I loved Portland. We closed in Portland. That was a great city. I loved Where else? I really liked Omaha, which was kind of a dark horse, but Omaha was really cool.
Shockingly great city.
Yeah, very cute. Really good food. Mm-hmm. Really good food. A really cute historic district. I joked it looked like Stars Hollow from Gilmore Girls. Kind of. I really loved Omaha. We played Vegas, which was wild, but that wasn't necessarily a walking
Vegas
city.
Did you play?
We played the Smith Center.
Okay.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool.
Yeah, well, that's... I've always said going to Vegas for work is not fun. So I wonder if it's the same when you're in a show that's different when you're work is at night is a little different.
It was a lot of sensory overload for me. I'm kind of somebody who after the show I like to sort of go back and kind of decompress and relax, and it's kind of hard to do that in Vegas.
You have
I think.
To after seeing memory like that's a
totally
it's supposed to be
totally.
Like a breakdown on stage essentially.
I'm trying to think another favorite city I had. We played Florida a lot. We had a lot of Floridian cities, which was really nice, especially because most of them fell in the winter.
So
that was nice.
Smart.
Yeah. So we played Tampa, West Palm. That was great. West Palm Beach was beautiful.
Did you have any city where the crowd was just like, that crowd was a spectacular Cats crowd, and others where it was like, no, this group didn't get it?
Some of the smaller cities, I felt like kind of they didn't really get it. I remember we would joke like leaving the theater. The swings would leave earlier because, you know, we weren't needed after a certain point. And I remember we would always hear audience commentary leaving the show and walking around. You're in plain clothes. Nobody's any idea who you are.
Yep.
So we would we'd always hear like, it was really great, but I wasn't sure what it was about. And we were kind of briefed by creative that that's how it's kind of going to be. You know so much of it because it's necessary for you to tell as much of the story as you can. But at the end of the day, it's based off of poems. And Grisabella, the glamour cat, was sort of taken out of a separate book.
Yeah, not in the book.
No, exactly. And you kind of it's our job to make sense of it all for an audience.
Yeah, and it's impossible. I mean, look, I did not catch any of this that I now can tell you about when I saw it in 2016.
Sure.
I caught none of it. I caught a few things. I couldn't remember half
the
names.
I didn't catch any of it.
I still probably couldn't pick half the cats out of a lineup if you asked me to.
Totally.
So I do. The other thing I always think a lot about is being from Indiana. They have a 5-show, I think, a year. Season tickets like pass,
right?
And it's whatever 5 shows, and you buy the season or you hope to get the individual.
Yep.
which means that a lot of people will go no matter what.
Have no idea what it's
about. And have no idea what it is. And I vividly remember, and the show I don't think did great anywhere, but it was American Idiot.
Oh, yeah.
And I went, it was a Saturday night. The family had the tickets. I was excited because, like, I like this music. I don't know what, I don't know what it's about, but I like the music. Sure. So, like, how bad can it be? No more than 10 minutes in, everybody over the age of 60 got up and left.
Oh, gosh.
Like, every single person.
Wow, wow, wow.
And it was a huge theater in Indiana. And it was like, that's, I've always been fascinated by that because I'm like, Cats is, was on, actually was on that tour in April of 2020. And that didn't make it. But, like, that would have been one of the five shows that year. Right. And I was like, how many people of that, like, in Indiana are going to, like, really love it, really get it, or are going to just be like, well, it's on my tour ticket,
so
I'm
going to take them. The advantage that Cats has is that it's been around for so long.
True.
So it's been around since the 80s. There's a film about it. Now there's two films about it. I haven't seen the new one, so I can't comment on it. No, I haven't seen it. I've heard many a thing, but I haven't seen it.
I'll tell you about it after we stop. I don't want, it's again, don't want to talk about it on here anymore.
And I think that also they have the Andrew Lloyd Webber. I mean, his music is unbelievable. He's so talented. I mean, everything that he writes is so, so, like, rich and interesting. And I mean, I think that is, does make a difference. But of course, there were always people that were kind of like, I don't know what this is. You know,
there's still a lot of people that are like that.
Yeah, for sure.
There's half the people I tell I have this podcast still don't know, like,
I believe
what
it.
It's about.
I believe it.
Yeah, it's like one of those things where I'm like, they're like, oh, I want to listen to support me. And I'm like, have you seen it? No. Yeah. Do you know who Grizabella is? No. I'm like, well, then
you're right.
None of this is going to make sense.
I mean, so many of my family and friends would come to see the show. They would kind of be like, what is it about beforehand? So I'd kind of give them a rundown. And afterwards, it never failed. They would always be like, thank God you told us, because otherwise we would have no idea what was happening.
Your rundown?
My rundown was just that basically there's this ritual every year where this group of cats meet in an alleyway and they have this ritual and they choose someone to go to the Heaviside Lair, which I equate to, like, cat heaven.
Yeah.
And they get another chance to be reincarnated and come back. And most of the show is all of the cats sort of auditioning, for lack of a better word, to be the choice. And there are certain disruptions, like Tugger's a disruption. He's never a choice. Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer are a disruption. They're never a choice. McCavity is never a choice.
Yep.
So I think there's certain disruptions, but for the most part, it's all just, look at me. This is why I'm, you know, Jenny's whole thing is that she pretends to be lazy, but she's actually not, you know, like, everybody's got their own
shtick. So you give them that much detail.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's like, I mean, what was that? Like 10 seconds?
It was a good minute or two. I mean, it's not long, but I think, like, hearing that, for me, I'm like, I got it. Hearing that, if you would have told me that before, I would have been like, Monkus Trap, Jenny, any of that, like, Mungo Jerry, like, what are you talking about? And most of them don't just repeat their name over and over again, besides Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. So I'd have been lost. I'd have been like, great.
Well, I don't know that I talk about the names, but I'll just be like, each cat is kind of auditioning for their.
Yeah, I still tell people when they go, I'm like, you're gonna watch, it's a weird America's Got Talent X Factor singing competition.
Kind of,
one gets killed at the end and goes up to the end.
Sure.
But now, moving forward, I'm telling everybody, they're having it's a cult. They're gonna have their ritual.
Yeah.
And it's gonna start with celebrating a girl's first orgasm, or a cat's first
Somebody's
orgasm.
Coming of age.
Then they're gonna have a orgy, and then they're gonna murder a cat.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, it's funny. The revival is actually way less, in my experience. The revival is a little bit less sexual in that regard than the original. The original was, like, very clear what's happening. Yeah. The revival is like, we're just all gonna go to sleep in a circle, and it's just a little bit less.
All right, let's transition to some rapid fire.
Okay.
So,
I'm excited.
You got to play two, Jelly and Grizz.
Yep.
If you could play any cat for one night, forget whether it's male, female, if you could do it, if you couldn't do it, if you just got to go on one night, who would you want to go as?
Demeter. Yeah.
Okay.
She's got the best acting arc one of the best acting arcs in the whole show.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
What about favorite and least favorite cat?
Favorite cat? I think my favorite cat is Cassandra.
Cassandra.
Yeah. When I saw the revival, I watched Cassandra the whole show.
Where does she fall in the age bracket?
They joke that she's the cat who went to finishing school. She is, I think, like a teenager.
Okay.
Yeah. Like an older teenager.
She feels almost like mm-hmm. omnipresent in a way.
Well, she kind of is. I mean, she's supposed to be, she's very aloof. She's very off to the side, but she wants to be engaged. But because she's kind of, like I said, she went to finishing school. She doesn't fit with like Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser. She doesn't fit, but she wants to be sort of, her and Alonzo were together a lot because they're kind of similar.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Least favorite cat is Mungo Jerry. He drives me nuts.
Why?
Just kind of because, well, he's the one that Pounceful is the one that scratches Grisabella. But he's always like poking the kittens. Like I know in Right Before Remark, Grisabella has this moment with Pounceful where he's sort of pretending to extend his paw to her and she falls for it and he scratches her. And the only reason he does that is because Mungo Jerry tells him to. Mungo Jerry's like, do this, do this. I mean, Rumpel Teaser, I think, is sort of a victim of Mungo Jerry being like.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you have no qualms with her.
No.
She's not part of the chaos.
No.
I always thought that they were like very much a
duo.
They're
definitely a team, but I think Mungo Jerry is kind of like the brains.
Okay.
And Rumpel Teaser is kind of like, yeah, it'll be fun. My brother told me to do this. You know?
So they are brother and sister. That's not always agreed upon.
Yeah, I think they're brother and sister.
So I always thought they're brother and sister and they're part of McCavity's like henchmen, but they really shouldn't be because they're actually just like rich dad type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're in it, but they don't need to be because they've got plenty, like they're doing it because they want to be out
there. Oh, I don't think they're part of McCavity's henchmen at all. Mm-mm. No, I think they're just like two.
I've clearly built McCavity's crime family to be a lot bigger than
I think so. Yeah. No, so I think because the reason that I think that McCavity is also outcast. And I think he's the third brother of Monkey, Strap and Tucker.
Yeah. So that seems like a standard that those three brothers and you have the I'm ready to take over serious one.
Yeah, you have
I'm
the William, the Harry, and then like the random love child that's just sort of.
Okay, so, let's move on.
Yeah.
Favorite song from the show?
McCavity.
Mm-hmm. That's my answer right now too, but I feel like my answer changes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depends
I
on
think
like
it's fun.
When I left the show as Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser.
Yeah, that's my earworm. That's the one that stays in my head.
Yep.
Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser. But I love McCavity. I think it's so, there's so much going on in the lyrics and the physicality. There's so much happening.
I can tell you my beef with McCavity's song though.
What is it?
If you listen to it on Spotify from the Cass album.
Okay.
It's 8 minutes long.
Yes.
I'm like, I want just a song. I don't need, because like I listen to most of my music on the subway in New York.
I get that.
And if I have a 3 minute quiet intro on the subway, I'm already like, what's the next song? I'm like skipping it.
Okay.
And so I love that song.
Mm-hmm.
I need somebody to cut that song for me and put
it
on Spotify.
So funny. Yeah.
So I can have the song.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's so fun to, it's the one that I always enjoyed singing like backstage.
Yeah.
It's the one that I loved watching because it's just like a chance for all the female cats to just like have at it and show their legs. And it's cool. It's cool.
My last rapid fire before we get to the crucial question.
Yes.
If like a cat was going on tour, which cat would be like in their best element? Like who would live the best tour life?
Jelly.
Jelly.
Yeah.
Why Jelly?
Because Jelly's very, in my mind, Jelly is very organized. She's very practical. And she's like, I sort of equate her to, have you ever watched Glee?
Mm-hmm.
The guidance counselor?
Yeah.
The one who ends up with Will Schuster. Like that to me is Jelly. She's like very organized. She's very practical. Two of her words are practical and cheery. I don't remember what the third one is, but she's very, I think she'd be very good at setting up her life in every new city.
I love that answer because I was thinking about it from a totally different angle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought it was Tucker.
Oh.
Where it's like, he's just going to cause chaos everywhere he goes.
Well.
He's going to always enjoy his life there. But I love that you're like, all right, here's who's going to like be able to survive
live on tour.
I'm sitting there like, who's going to have the craziest rider and be ready to go before they like, and
that's
their boss is
still
be there.
Tugger for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the final question.
Okay.
The most important question.
Yes.
And I love hearing, because as a swing, you got to cover Grizz and Jelly.
Sure.
And a lot of Grizzes always defend Grizabella.
Mm-hmm.
But if
I will
you
too,
are,
but I have a different choice.
Okay, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your Jellicle choice? Do you, and then I would love to actually hear your Grizabella's defense.
Okay.
And then who would you, if you're old Deuteronomy, who are you picking?
Okay. Do you want my Grizabella defense first?
Yeah, because I think it's gonna, I'm gonna poke on it.
Okay,
and then,
that's fine.
Then
you can
I
totally
wanna hear
do that.
What you actually think.
Okay, so my defense of Grizabella is that everybody talks about the tribe's journey and changing and growing, and I think for me, especially playing her on tour, was one of the biggest, most profound things that I found was that she changes so much throughout the whole show. And I think if you're humanizing her a little bit more and you're equating her to somebody who's like suffered from addiction or suffered from any sort of substance abuse, there is a period of time where they really don't think they have an issue. And they and Grisabella, that is very prevalent in her first like two or three appearances. She doesn't ask for help. She just sort of puts, Chrissy said right before Remark, the reason she enters in Remark is she's literally just looking for somewhere quiet to lay down where no one will look at her. And so she's kind of just kind of putting herself in these situations. She's not asking for help. She's not, she's still, she, one of her three words is proud. And that's one that I really held on to when I was on stage with her, because she refuses to ask for what she needs. And even she's very prideful, even like on her exit after Remark and after Grisabella the Glamour Cat, she has this moment where she turns around and she like kind of scares Monk, because she's still like trying to show that she's she's okay and she's fine. She doesn't have an issue. And one of the things that Chrissy said is that if she's probably had a couple of drinks before showing up to each of these appearances, each of these scenes.
Okay, so she's not clean.
What?
Well, she's not totally clean then.
No, and one of the things is that she is, I think, when if you have an alcoholic or you ever seen an alcoholic, they spend their entire existence trying to prove that they're not drunk. So I think she, in all of her moments before the big ending, she's still sort of trying to be like, I'm fine, I can walk in a straight line, I'm totally okay. And even her physicality is very slow and it's very deliberate, and that's all because she's trying to show everybody that she doesn't need help, she needs to be let back in.
So then why let her back in and immediately kill her? Like, why not give her another year?
Well, okay, I'm not done. So, and then I think she has this very vulnerable moment with the broken doll dance at the end of Act One, where she's honest for the first time, and you can see that she sort of is vulnerable, and she's close to death, and she's having a hard time, and she has this very vulnerable moment where she puts out her paw at the end of Act One, and no one's there, and she, you can see like the brokenness on her face, and then you can see what the tribe is missing. And then I think at the end, when she finally sings Touch Me, that's the first time she actually asks for what she needs. So she overcomes this insane pride to just finally go and say, I need help. I need someone to help me. Otherwise, I'm going to die. And I think that that journey is why she gets chosen. That's the reason, her huge change, and the reason that she finally gets to this place where she can ask for help and she can ask for what she needs, is the reason that she gets chosen.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
But then why is the help her death?
Because otherwise, I think there's two options, right? You die and you don't go to the Heaviside Layer, or you die and you do.
But so there's no version of this where she comes back to her family and now, so clean and sober, gets a year to spend with her daughter.
Sure. I get that.
Like, that's where I find the challenge of, like, if she's truly on her deathbed, well, isn't Gus kind of also truly on his deathbed? Like there's arguments there. So I get the redemption arc. I get the story.
Yeah.
But I don't see the reward of the redemption arc and being let back into the family being immediately.
Like, because I think she's embraced before that in a way that she wasn't before.
3 minutes.
Yes. Like, yes, but it's still there. It still happens.
I know.
Yeah, that's, I get that. I get
what
you're saying.
Like, all right, hold on. Yeah. I let's bring her back in and let's give her a year. She can go spend time with Victoria.
Totally.
She can maybe save Demeter.
Maybe.
Like, there's a lot that she could be doing now that she's let back in.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
She's not given the chance.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's your actual choice?
My actual choice is Jelly.
Okay. What's Jelly's reason?
Jelly spends her entire show taking care of other people. And I think even her own opportunity to sing a song and prove her own eligibility, is she still uses to promote Gus. And I think, and to encourage him to tell his own story, which I think is so admirable. She spends the whole show like taking care. There's a pass at the beginning of Tugger where she sort of shoos Syllabub away and kind of is like, tries to help her get out of Tugger's way, and she spends the whole show taking care of everybody else. And I think even though she begrudgingly can't stand Tugger, she still spends she still helps out his number. She sings the high note at the end. Like, the whole show she spent just caring for other people.
And so that is, so I love the reason of she's deserving because she is
totally,
she's selfless.
Yes.
So I do think a little bit about, with only having one ball, I want to take this a step further.
Okay.
Of both choices that you have, Grisabella or Jelly, which are also
two
people you play.
My two girls.
So I do think that they're like, that's another question that's interesting.
Yeah.
let's say in each scenario that person gets picked.
Sure.
And old Deuteronomy makes his decision. Is it the same decision every year? As in, like, does he pick the selfless person every year? Does he pick the redemption every year? Or does his criteria change every year?
I think it changes every year.
Okay.
I think it depends on what the... So I think another reason that Grisabella gets chosen is because this is a lesson that the tribe needs to learn.
So it's whatever they need to learn that year. And it could be a different thing each year.
Yeah, it could be, I think. Yeah.
Okay. So then it's like, why this redemption this year? That's like, it's part of the story we're not giving.
Well, because I think he sees... I don't think he starts out the ball knowing he's going to pick her.
Yeah, it seems like that's pretty consistent.
Yeah, I think it's evidence that as he watches the tribe react to her,
yeah,
that he realizes.
Who was his pick before then? Was it still Joey?
I think it was Gus.
It was Gus. Yeah. Okay, so Gus was the choice.
I think it was Gus. That's what I was led to believe, is that originally it was Gus, and then Gus does a beautiful thing where he sets up, because he starts out telling his story and the kittens are sort of like dismissive because he's just mm-hmm. like the older cat, and Chrissy described him as the uncle who will always tell the stories of his young life at a party,
yeah.
and who, like, the younger cats are kind of like, ugh, again. Yeah. Like, God. And I think by the time he finishes Peaks and Pollicles, and by the time he finishes everything, they're all so excited about him. And then it sets up for Skimble. So I think, but what Gus does is he sort of primes their change of heart for Grizz.
So interesting. So that is within his song.
Yeah.
Because I always wondered where that moment was. And mm-hmm. I thought it was more of when she came back the first time.
No. I think it's when she when they
Gus,
finish. Yeah. I think Gus primes them for that.
It's so interesting. Because there's... Okay, lots to think about. I'm just glad you didn't pick Grisabella originally, even though you can defend her.
Yeah, I will defend her forever because she's my girl, but no.
But not your choice. Like, when I actually do my ranking, though, I'm putting Jelly as your answer.
Yes, Jelly is my answer. Justice, hashtag justice for Jelly.
Justice for Jelly. How can people stay in touch with you, see what everything you're working on?
Instagram, like, and I'm on TikTok. And it's just my name, Kellyanne DiCarlo, on Instagram and TikTok for both.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing
this. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is so fun.
All the theories. So fun to have.
Thanks.
New ones, different ones. Always a good time. I think that's what my favorite part of the show is. I feel like I never get one line on anything.
Well, it's one of those shows you can go and no matter, I can see the show 20 times, and if I watch a different cat every time, I'll see a different show.
And the Junkyard does that.
Yes.
There's a group of people that do that.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Oh, yeah. There's a group of super fans that do that.
These fans really keep the show alive, I swear. They're so, they're so important,
I think, to the show. It's going to continue. The Winter Garden's going to be open soon, too.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's time to come back.
Oh, God.
I don't think it will, but it's time.
They have another year of tour.
I know. They got exactly. Well, thank you for being an amazing guest.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was fun.
And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of us who listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.